This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here on episode 36 of the 90 Feet From Home Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are presented by Underdog Fantasy, and I am your host, Joe Orico. You guys can check me out over on Twitter at JoeOrico99. That's where I share out all of my newest stuff, whether it be these podcasts, any articles that I write, stuff that goes out directly onto Twitter. You guys can check all of that out at JoeOrico99. Today we are going to be getting into Tuesday's slate, breaking down the things that stood out to me before we get into the more popular ads and drops of the day later on, looking at Yahoo's waiver wire as we usually do. If you guys missed yesterday's show, James Anderson from RotoWire, he's the lead prospect analyst and a senior editor over there. He joined me to talk about 17 rookie/prospect pitchers, what we've seen so far in 2024, our expectations rest of season, and also looking ahead to future years. We talked about Paul Skenes, Jarrett Jones, Mason Miller, Luis Gil, Cade Horton, Jackson Jobe, Ricky Tiedemann, lots of guys that we talked about, guys who have debuted and also a bunch who haven't. So lots of great insight yesterday from James. He's one of the more respected dynasty/prospect analysts that there is in the fantasy baseball world. So highest recommendations there to check out that show. It was a lot of fun, and we went a bit longer than I usually do. It was about an hour and 20 minutes. So lots of fun there. Make sure you are checking it out. But let's get into Tuesday's action. And we have to start with Gerrit Cole, because this was pretty horrendous stuff. Without looking at his whole game log for his whole career here, this has got to be one of the worst outings we've ever seen from him. 4 innings of 6-run ball, where he allowed 7 hits and 4 walks without striking out a batter, 21% CSW, and a 6.9% swinging strike rate. His velocity was kind of all over the place. He did get up to 98. I think he hit 99 a few times as well. But we were looking at a bunch of fastballs that were in the 92 to 93 range. He had a stretch of pitches where it was like 91, 93, 92, 93. It is a bit concerning, to say the least, especially when it's paired with these pretty horrendous, like this particularly was a bad performance. His first start was fine. This was pretty, pretty bad stuff. Now, I worry about his elbow. I know that there wasn't actually a tear in the UCL, so I'm not sure if he like technically avoided surgery or whatever, if he was even a candidate for surgery. But it feels like somebody who has this many innings under his arm, we're looking at almost 2,000 innings, he's been a workhorse in his career every year, 200-plus innings, pretty much. There's the odd season where he missed a little bit of time, but mostly we're looking at 200-plus seasons. There's a lot of mileage there. And I think the elephant in the room for me also is that while Gerrit Cole won the Cy Young last season, it was one of the worst years he'd had in a few seasons. I know that sounds pretty crazy. If you just look at the numbers, last year Gerrit Cole's strikeout rate, 27% was the lowest it had been since his Pittsburgh days. 27% for most pitchers is very good. But when you've been coming off of 32, 33, 32, 39, he had a 39.9% strikeout rate in 2019. Like, we are drastically reduced from that. Are we going to make the argument that, well, Gerrit Cole's still in the, like, ramp-up phase and we shouldn't read too much into this? Yeah, but considering his age, considering the fact that I honestly believe he was starting to decline last year and the results on the surface were very good, but he outperformed his ERA estimators by like a whole run last year. His Sierra of 363 last season was, again, the highest since his Pittsburgh days. So I think we were already starting to enter a slight decline, not to say that he was going to just fall off and be garbage, but that he's no longer really that, you know, top two, top three pitcher in the game. And I would have said that, and I did say that before we even knew he was injured. If you go back and listen to my old shows on the old feed, I don't think anybody's actually going to do that. But if you go listen to my starting pitcher preview shows that we did in February or March, I was a little bit concerned about Gerrit Cole before we knew that there was an injury. Now you add in the elbow and the garbage performance we saw yesterday with the reduced velocity. You can make the argument that, well, Gerrit Cole is still ramping up and you give him a few starts and he'll be fine. And that is certainly a possibility. But I also think we have to kind of brace ourselves for the possibility that maybe Gerrit Cole is kind of not that ace anymore. People who were holding him all season are going to be kind of disappointed, I think, going forward, whether it's because, A, he's not able to stay healthy, which I think is probably a decently likely outcome at this point, or B, the performances just aren't what you're hoping for because, like I said, he's not quite the same pitcher that he was in the Houston days or even the first couple of years as a Yankee. I do think we are starting to see him, you know, become an old man. And that, maybe that's, you know, not the right word to use, but in his age 34 season at this point, he's been around a long, long time, and I just don't know how confident I am in him going forward. I think that you can take his name value, and you can probably get yourself something very, very nice. Maybe today is not the best day to do it after what we saw yesterday, but over the coming week or two, I think that it would make sense to just explore what somebody's willing to offer you for Gerrit Cole. He's the reigning Cy Young winner. His name is like he's going to go to the Hall of Fame one day. I think that there's a good argument to be made that you can get something really nice and a lot more stable than Gerrit Cole, specifically if you're looking for a batter. A lot of people are, you know, I know I sound like a broken record, but offense is garbage this season. If you're able to trade Gerrit Cole for like a solid, solid top 100 bat type player, I am absolutely doing it. I think that there's a good chance this doesn't end well. And even if he is able to avoid the surgery, I am kind of curious what the performances are that we see rest of season. I think that it won't be this bad always, because this is about as bad as you're going to see from anybody. But I also don't think we're ever going to see Gerrit Cole get to those Cy Young levels again. And again, I could be wrong, because with generational pitchers like Cole, like Scherzer, Verlander, Kershaw, these guys, it's hard to use the typical benchmarks when evaluating them. I don't know if anybody would have thought that Verlander would come back at age 38 or whatever it was and have a sub-2 ERA, win the Cy Young. It was his best season of his career off of Tommy John surgery after missing 2 years. Like, these guys do some crazy things here and there, and that's why, like, when you are using these Hall of Fame type of players, like Ohtani. Ohtani's coming off of whatever surgery he had in the offseason, and everybody was expecting kind of a down year. He's on pace for 50 home runs. So it's tough to evaluate them the same way as other players, and there's a chance that Gerrit Cole is able to get that velocity back and become old Gerrit Cole again. But I think there are a lot of roadblocks in the way of that happening. If you're able to deal him and get a top 100 type of player, I think you should be really seriously considering doing that. Let's talk about Kevin Gausman. Pretty solid start for him against the Red Sox. 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, 5 strikeouts, and 1 walk. 25% CSW and a 10.4% swinging strike rate. At this point, you kind of have to recalibrate your expectations. As much as I hate to say it, I don't think that Kevin Gausman is that same pitcher we've seen over the last 4 years, who was Cy Young worthy pretty much all 4 of those seasons. From 2020 through 2023, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball. If you look at WAR, if you look at strikeout minus walk rates, you look at ERAs, ERA estimators, he was brilliant. And he's not that same guy anymore, and I think a huge part of it is the strikeouts are now very much average. And it is kind of backed up by the swinging strike rate as well. He has been a 15, 14, 13% swinging strike rate guy over the last 4 seasons, since he kind of broke out during the COVID year in San Francisco. Now he's down to 11.1 on the swinging strike rate and 22% strikeout rate. So not to say like he's getting screwed or whatever. We talked about Gavin Stone yesterday. Pretty high swinging strike rate, low strikeout rate. And you can say, okay, maybe he's leaving some strikeouts on the table. He's probably going to, you know, that's probably going to correct itself as the year goes on. You're not going to see a 12 or 13% swinging strike rate with a 19% strikeout rate for terribly long. But when the numbers are essentially doubled, and that's a good way if you're not familiar with swinging strike rate, you see a 10% swinging strike, you can assume it's going to be about a 20% strikeout rate. It's not perfect, but that's generally a good rule of thumb to use here. Gausman, I just don't see the strikeouts really coming back anytime soon. Based on what we're seeing from him in terms of like the grades of his pitches, he just isn't as good as he was. Let's look at last season. If you look at the Stuff Plus numbers on the fastball, it was 110. It was 105 on the splitter, and it was 96 on the slider. Now this year, those numbers have gone down to 99, 92, and 94. His overall stuff rating in 2023 was 105. This year, it is 95. So I don't think that he is quite the same pitcher that he once was, and I think it's going to be very hard for him to get back to that level at this point. Maybe he does. Again, it's very, very hard to know, especially because he dealt with shoulder fatigue, and he's maybe not operating at full speed this year. Maybe next year we're able to see him get back to it, but in terms of 2024, like the next time I update my pitcher rankings in July, he's going to come pretty far down. I think that Kevin Gausman is one of those guys who I'll be teetering on the edge of, like, is he in the top 20, 25 range? Because I think the strikeouts could maybe come back, but There's nothing to really indicate that they are at this point. The ERA is 4.29. The estimator's 3.60 xFIP is very solid, 3.71 Sierra. But, again, he's just not quite the same guy that he once was. He can still be a very good pitcher and somebody that you're still starting, like, essentially every time out. But I don't think that we're going to see him on Cy Young ballots or in top tens of pitcher rankings for very long. There's no point in selling him because you're going to get fleeced at this point based on what we've seen. Buying is also kind of a risky proposition. If those strikeouts don't come back and you buy him hoping for a big turnaround, you might be paying a little bit too much for somebody who is not quite what you're expecting. So I think that you just kind of have to hope that he gets through the summer relatively unscathed, and then we reset in the offseason and see what we're seeing for next year. But I don't think Kevin Gausman is going to be a top 25 pitcher for me in 2025 rankings. He's been a top 10 pitcher for me, preseason each of the last 3 years. I've been a huge fan. I was a huge fan before he came to Toronto, and then he comes to my team, and I liked him that much more, just getting to see him so much more often. And he was truly brilliant. Like, Kevin Gausman over these last several years, truly, truly breathtaking. Probably could have won a Cy Young, and nobody would have batted an eye. But I just don't think he's that same guy right now. Maybe he gets back there, but I'm not banking on it with Kevin Gausman. Let's talk about David Peterson. It was the quintessential David Peterson start. 4 1/3 innings, 3 hits, 1 earned run. Right there, not too bad. 8 strikeouts, really good. But he walked 5 batters. 30% CSW, 12.6% swinging strike rate. It's nice to see the strikeouts come back. Those were our conversations a couple weeks ago, that David Peterson was coming back with 1, 2, 3 strikeout games. I didn't know what to make of it. It was very strange for somebody who'd always had very good strikeout rates. And, it's good to see them come back, but they've also come with a shitload of walks. And that's always, kind of the standard David Peterson. You're going to get a lot of strikeouts, but you're also going to get a lot of walks. And that was no different yesterday. I think the command, the walk rate, all that put together is the big issue here. If David Peterson had like a 7% walk rate, even 8% walk rate, I could probably be like, all right, those strikeouts make it worthwhile. I think the talent is good enough below the surface that he can kind of make that work. But when you're walking more than 10% of batters, pushing 11%, I don't know that there's a hell of a lot we can do from a fantasy point of view. I really like him as a pitcher, and I've always thought that he was just 1 or 2 tweaks away from a breakout. Same with his teammate, Tyler McGill. Been big fans of them for a while. But until he's able to demonstrate more consistency at the big league level, I think he's just a matchup-based streamer in deeper leagues. Like, I'd like to say that David Peterson could be a 12-team guy, but I think at this point it would be very risky to start him on a given day unless you're getting, like, just a beautiful, beautiful matchup. I just don't see it. Now, the schedule for the Mets pitchers is kind of in flux because I think Christian Scott's going to come back up and they're dealing with a couple of moving parts, but he could pitch against the Nationals next week. And in that situation, I probably would take a shot in 12 teamers, but I don't think he's somebody that's like, oh, you got to go get Peterson because this is him turning things around. Like, I'm just not quite there yet. We're in kind of a prove-it mode with him until he kind of earns that for me in shallow leagues, and I don't know that he ever will. If we get the command, really sorted out, then that's a different story. But as of right now, I think David Peterson is definitely more of a deep league streamer. Let's talk about Hunter Brown. If he's still available, you pick him up immediately. There's no question at this point. He has been just brilliant over the last 6 or 7 starts now. 7 starts, and it's 7 consecutive quality starts there as well. 6 shutout innings yesterday, 7 strikeouts, 2 hits, 3 walks with a 33% CSW, and a 21.2% swinging strike rate. Last night when I put these notes together, 79% on Yahoo, 67% on ESPN, there was a lot of early season rage drops, and they were justifiable. He was pretty terrible. He was killing you. But at this point, if you're seeing him out there on the wire, I think at worst he's an SP3. Just completely turned his season around. The overall numbers are still fairly high. So if you are looking at like season-long totals, yeah, that ERA is at 4.37. The WHIP is at 1.37. You look back over the last month, and Hunter Brown is the number 5 ranked player in all of fantasy. 45 strikeouts and 37 innings with 4 victories, a 1.22 ERA, and a 0.89 WHIP. He should be added in absolutely every league. I think we're going to see a big second half from him. I predicted a breakout coming into the year. I think it was even late last year. And then the way the year started, I was like, holy shit. Like, I don't think I've ever gotten a call more wrong in my life. Now we're kind of seeing that come to fruition a little bit. I don't know if I'm going to call that a win or not. I think we'll call that neutral just based on how the season started. But he is doing great things. It's really nice to see a young guy who had a lot of hype, and justifiably so, after how he had his first cup of coffee in 2022. Massive strikeout rates, good command, nice ERA estimators. It's good to see those kind of coming to fruition now as Hunter Brown kind of breaks out, quote-unquote breaks out. It's hard to say because, you know, you're still looking at a 450 ERA almost. Is he breaking out? If you look at the last seven starts, it's hard to argue that he isn't. Let's talk about Mark Vientos. You know, we talked about Garrett Cole's struggles earlier. Mark Vientos hit two home runs off of him, and he's been very impressive this season as a whole. 297 batting average with a 349 on base, a 576 slug, which is just absurd. 21 runs, 9 homers, and 20 ribbies. It's only in 34 games. That's incredible stuff. The barrel rate, well over 13%. It's very easy to envision Mark Vientos giving you 25-plus home runs this season. I think that they're maybe 20 to 25 range is more realistic than 25-plus, just based on the fact that he didn't miss, he wasn't up to start the season. But the power is completely legit. I think that that lineup, as it gets hotter, you're going to see guys, you're going to see this team stabilize a little bit. They've been hot for a while. They're not going to stay this hot as they've been over the last week or two. But I think it's a fairly stable offense where if you're looking at runs and RBI totals, he plays the rest of the season. I think that we're looking at, 60 runs, 60 RBI type of deal with 20-plus homers. And I think the batting average will be somewhere in, the 260 range for Mark Vientos. Considering how terrible third base is this year, and you're also getting first base with that as well with Vientos, I think that he is a no-brainer type of pickup for me. On the offensive side of things, I think he might be the top priority pickup right now. 34% on Yahoo is really selling him short. It's just so hard to find those power bats. His barrel rate actually went up from 13.6 to 15.4 with those homers yesterday. That is a stupid barrel rate, 15.4. When he first debuted, it was 8.3. Last year, 10.7. This year, 15.4. Will it stay at 15.4? That might be pushing it a little bit, but man, he has some serious raw power. I don't think he should be sitting on any waiver wires at this point, even in really shallow leagues.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/westwoodone.
Let's talk about Richie Palacios. I think that Richie Palacios is a really solid player who's kind of fallen under the radar a little bit here. I think he's a lot better than people give him credit for. And don't get me wrong, I don't think that Richie Palacios is going to cut it in really shallow leagues. But if you are looking at slightly deeper formats, five outfielder, if it's an NFBC league, AL only, I think there could be something here. So if you look at the triple slash line, it's not crazy, but he's batting 249 with a 344 on base, 345 slug. The power is not his strong suit. But he's got 35 runs, the four homers, 16 ribbies, and he's got 12 stolen bases as well. We're seeing him play most days at this point. He's not an every single day type of player, but pretty close to it recently. Like, he's playing five out of six games type of deal. You're looking at second base and outfield eligibility. This is not somebody to look at in shallow formats, Richie Palacios, but I think when you're starting to look at those deeper leagues where there's, like, really, outfield is a brutal position this year. Like, up until last week, there's a couple of leagues where I had, like, Nelson Velazquez, who just got sent down, on my 15-team five outfielder rosters, because there's just nothing else when there's 75 to 90 outfielders rostered in a league. It's very hard to find anything. Palacios is giving you something. You can do better in shallow formats, but in the deeper leagues, I really think you can get like 20-plus stolen bases. You're probably going to get about 10 homers. Tampa's weird, and that's probably the one thing that's like, well, maybe it doesn't work out because of Tampa. Because their playing time, it's hard to predict, right? He might do great things for a week and then ride the pine for a few days. Cash is impossible to predict the way who's going to start on a given day, who's going to close, who's going to be in the lineup. They're very frustrating. But what we've seen from him so far is solid for those deeper leagues. And it's kind of underwhelming because of the players we usually talk about. I usually do kind of narrow it down to more of the 10, 12 team pickups a lot of the time. But I think Richie Palacios is a really solid option if you are talking about looking towards the next couple of years in a dynasty slash keeper league. He's somebody you can get for essentially nothing. And I think that there is a lot here. He doesn't strike out a lot. The walk rate is very high, 11.4%. Good speed. Tampa's a team where I'm not sure what they're going to look like year to year in the lineup. But I think that they're going to be okay over the next couple of seasons. This year might be like a reset for them. Arozarena's been bad. Josh Lau's been hurt. Their pitching has been in. Everybody in the rotation is injured. So I don't know if this is the greatest year to really judge Tampa as a whole. I think going forward, Palacios is a really, really solid option. Should he stay with Tampa or wherever he goes, I do think that there is some deep league viability here. But again, if you're just listening in the car right now and you're distracted, I know that's how I listen to a lot of podcasts, and you just heard me say Richie Palacios, you don't need to go pick him up in those 10-teamers. But really, really think about him in those deeper leagues that you're playing. Let's talk about Jonathan India. I mean, this guy has caught absolute fire recently. Yesterday, he reached base four times, had three runs and a couple stolen bases, and that's now four consecutive multi-hit games for him. The season-long line is pretty respectable. 264 batting average, 374 on base, 382 slug. We're looking at 36 runs, five homers, 30 ribbies, and eight stolen bases. I think he's going to have a very solid second half. Now, the thing with Jonathan India is that the power metrics are pretty bad. If you look at pretty much all of them, he's taken a step back in terms of his exit velocity, his max exit velocity, his launch angles down, barrel rates down, hard hits down. Everything is kind of down. But I do think, like, even with those numbers the way they are, playing the year in Cincinnati, especially the summer at Great American Ballpark, it's probably going to be like 15 home runs still. 13 to 15 home runs. He gets a little bit hot. Maybe we see 20. But he hit 17 last year. He had 21 as a rookie. If we're seeing him play a whole season, I think we're generally going to get similar type of numbers to what we saw. We're not seeing quite the same barrel rates and exit velocities that we were, but honestly, the exit velocity is pretty similar to what he did as a rookie. Barrel rate's not quite the same, but I do think that part kind of offsets some of the potential problems you're going to have. It's an absolute home run, mansion, for lack of a better word. Like, you see guys put up crazy stupid numbers in Cincinnati because of the dimensions of the park. And I think that you look at India's overall profile. He's walking 13% of the time, more than 13% of the time, hitting 264. He's stealing bases, decent enough counting stats. We're looking at just about a run and an RBI per game combined, you know, 66 runs and ribbies in 72 games. And that was with a cold start to the year as well. I think Jonathan India is a really nice player to pick up. Again, talking about bad positions this year, second base is absolutely dreadful. I did updated second base rankings a week ago, maybe a little bit more than a week ago. And you get past like the Bryson Stotts and the Ketel Martes of the world, and you're like, who do I put here now? It's tough. It's really tough once you get to like the 5, 6, 7 range. It's a shitty position. But Jonathan India has been a top 50 player over the last month. We know that there's decent enough pedigree here. I don't know that he's like an amazing baseball player, but he's solid enough where he should be rostered, I think, in all fantasy leagues going forward. He's still, like, he's gone up on Yahoo, but he's still 63%. Tons of ads today. He is among the most added players. We're going to skip over him later because we're talking about him now. But he's up from 54 to 63% on Yahoo. If you need a second baseman or you just need a little bit of offensive production, I think Jonathan India is a great option for you to take a look at. Let's talk about Royals third baseman Michael Garcia. So he was briefly dropped from the leadoff spot in Kansas City, and we did see a bunch of people cut bait on him. He went from about 87, 88% on Yahoo down to 83, which is not a massive difference, but he's still getting dropped in thousands of leagues at that point. Every percentage is, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but every percentage on Yahoo is about, I think it's about 1,000 leagues or so. Roughly, that's how it works out. So thousands of people drop Michael Garcia after we saw him leave the leadoff spot. And he had been absolutely dreadful. If you look at his numbers over the last month, he's batting .168 with no home runs, you know, 18 hits over his last 107 at bats. It's been pretty awful for him. Garcia getting moved out of the leadoff spot looked to be kind of like the beginning of the end, but they did put him back after a couple games down. I'm not sure what exactly made them do that. Two games, one of them where he batted seventh, one of them where he batted eighth, and then they put him back in the leadoff spot. He went 1-for-6 combined in those two games, so it's not like they moved him down, he hit a home run, they moved him back up. I think it's kind of weird the way they've gone about it, but as long as Michael Garcia is in that leadoff spot, I think that he is fantasy viable just based on the run and stolen bases that he's going to be able to give you. If he does get moved down the lineup, then that's the end of the fantasy value, because we're talking about a guy who's hitting .235, who has 5 home runs. A lot of his value has come from, first of all, those early season RBI that he had, which is really carrying a lot of the weight here. He's 39 for the season as a whole and only 6 over the last 30 days. The runs that he's gotten, 48 of them, which is a very, very nice number to have at this point. He's on pace for a 100-run season just about. But if they move him back down to 7th or 8th in the order, I think Michael Garcia is a pretty easy drop. But as of now, well, he is leading off. And yesterday, he did steal a couple bases. He didn't have a hit, but he got on a couple times. He had a run. You know, he was fine. As long as he's in the top of the order, at the top of the order, he's a fine fantasy asset. But again, if we see Michael Garcia get dropped or start to lose playing time or whatever, that's when you just need to cut him. If Kansas City ends up, you know, playing him every other day or something, or whatever the case may be, his fantasy value is fully tied to being an everyday player at the top of that order. Things start to change, then that's when Michael Garcia becomes a pretty easy drop for me. He's 83% rostered right now. He's not a drop as of now. If you're seeing him out there, in fact, I would pick him up just in case. You know, he's able to stick at the top of the order the whole season. We're going to see probably a few more homers, nothing crazy, but a few more homers. You're going to get good speed from him. If he's there leading off, he's viable. But I think, you know, if he keeps up this performance, batting .160 over a month, he's going to make it very easy for them to move him out of the top of the order. So just something to keep in mind there for Michael Garcia. Let's talk about the biggest pickups and drops of the day. We mentioned Spencer Turnbull yesterday. He started and he left early with a shoulder injury. Not great stuff. You know, 3 innings, he allowed 1 run, struck out 2 batters. It's an early, early slate today. Typically I record, just give you a little bit peek behind the curtain, I record 2 to 3 o'clock most days, somewhere in that time frame. I'm doing producing stuff in the morning for Fantasy Pros, doing some writing, and this is when I'm able to record. Spencer Turnbull has left the start, shoulder injury. This was a stream anyway. He got added in a shitload of leagues, 29% jump. He went all the way up to 48% on Yahoo. I think you know, based on my concerns that I had about what the workload is going to be, he wasn't fully built up. I said he was a stream today. I said he was a 12-team, 15-team streamer for today. But he wasn't much more than somebody to pick up because of a good matchup. He got the whole revenge narrative against his old team, whatever. But shoulder injury, not stretched out. I'm not sure what's going to happen going forward, but I think in most cases, you are going to be very happily sending him back to the waiver wire. Hayden Birdsong. I literally had to look him up to make sure I wasn't getting pranked when somebody asked me in my chat earlier about him. I was like, Hayden Birdsong? Like, I truly thought this was a prank at first. He has never played a major league game. He's going to be making his debut tonight against the Cubs. Two appearances at AAA. He is 22 years old. I mentioned yesterday and today, I bring on people like James Anderson and Eric Cross and those guys because I'm not a big prospect guy. But when I saw Hayden Birdsong come across my screen, I'm like, all right, it's too early in the morning for people to be having a go at me. But no, he is a real pitcher. 8% of Yahoo leagues have added him up today for his start against the Cubs. I don't think there's much here, really, in terms of the day. Like, debuts scare me. Debuts always kind of scare me, and I shouldn't say there's not much there with him because there are some really nice numbers that he's put up in the minors, but the command has been pretty drastically bad throughout all of his stops at the minors, double-digit walk rate. Strikeouts are very good. Strikeouts are very good from him, usually above the 30% threshold, but he has kind of just been so-so in the minor leagues. This looks like it's just going to be a spot start. The Cubs don't scare me. But just trusting a guy in his debut does kind of scare me, especially when there are command issues. It could get pretty ugly. I don't think there's really much of a need to be adding Hayden Birdsong today. Yes, he is a real person, but we're not picking him up regardless. Simeon Woods Richardson is getting a start against Arizona tonight. I've been pretty impressed with him as a whole. I think the upside is fairly limited. I don't think that he's going to give you monstrous strikeouts. Minnesota's an all-right team. Wins are going to be so-so. But I think he's a solid enough play in 12-teamers. Maybe a little more matchup-dependent than like a must-start type of player. But against Arizona, I think I'd be pretty confidently starting him in most cases. He's been very, very good. Two starts that he's made out of 12 where he's allowed more than three earned runs. Command has been mostly good. But he did have the four-walk game two starts ago against Oakland, which did have some people worried. It was a bad start, like one of his bad starts against Oakland, one of them against Toronto, two terrible teams. Actually, he was a Toronto draft pick, so maybe there was something there in terms of nerves or whatever, pitching in Toronto, I don't know. But he's been very, very good as a whole. And I think against a team like Arizona, he's a solid enough streamer. And I don't, he's not a must-roster player, but 21% on Yahoo is probably selling him a little short. So starting pitcher, relief pitcher, eligible. I think there's a lot to like with Simeon Woods Richardson. Jonathan India is among the popular ads of the day. And this game has also started, and it's, I mentioned earlier, four consecutive multi-hit games. It's now five consecutive multi-hit games for Jonathan India. If you want him, you should go get him right now. I think that this is going to be a very nice second half for him. Even if the power isn't monstrous, you're going to get a nice, well-rounded stat line in that ballpark. Heston Kjerstad. Man, he didn't play the first game, he got called up, played the second one, goes 2-for-4, and then doesn't play yesterday. They wanted to sit him against a left-handed pitcher. I guess it was Logan Allen, who's absolutely garbage. You figure you just want to send him out there and see what you got, but no, they put him on the bench. We haven't got a lineup for tonight yet. I don't know what's going to happen with him, but I feel like in shallow leagues, this might get annoying. Like, I did add him myself in two places just to see, you know, maybe there's something here. Maybe they're going to play him a lot. If he's sitting tonight against Carlos Carrasco, I'm going to be very, very upset. There's absolutely no reason for it. Carrasco, at this point of his career, he stinks. I know what he did against the Blue Jays last time because the Blue Jays are just awful. But if he's not in the lineup against Carrasco tonight, I'm going to lose a lot of faith in how the Orioles are going to use him. I kind of went on a tirade the other day about why these guys get called up and not just playing every day, especially with a guy with Kjerstad. Who's kind of proven everything he needs to prove in the minors. It's the James Wood situation all over again. Call these guys up and see what we got. You know, enough is enough already at a certain point with Kjerstad. In those deeper leagues, deep 12s, 15-team leagues, yeah, he's still somebody to hold on to. In a 10-teamer, you're playing in a three-outfield 10-team league, there's a lot of options. I don't know that he's really somebody who's going to cut it. You start getting into the deeper, okay, 12-team, 4-outfield, 5-outfield, whatever. You start to add spots, he becomes more viable. But in those standard size ESPN leagues where you guys send me the screenshots and there are just these all-star stacked rosters, there's no real room for streaming pitchers. I don't think Kjerstad is going to cut it unless we're talking very specific 10-team leagues. I think for the most part, you're pretty okay to either leave him on the wire or send him back to the wire. It's not quite an Aurelvis Martinez called up and not play at all situation.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
And it's different from Aurelvis for a number of other reasons, but I don't think that he is going to be somebody that's such a great fantasy asset down the stretch. I could be wrong there. With the Orioles, they're another kind of unpredictable team. They're a very smart franchise, but they also do kind of weird, stupid things sometimes. So I think Hierstad is definitely fine in deeper leagues for now, but if you're playing in those shallow formats, I just can't really get behind it. Spencer Horwitz, I've talked about him quite a bit recently. I don't think there's enough here to justify an ad outside of those deep formats. Again, if you're playing an NFBC league and you're trying to fill corner, middle infield spots, that's a different story. But I think for most of you guys in your 10-teamers, 12-teamers, Horwitz doesn't have a lot of speed. There's almost no power. The batting average is very good, but you're getting just batting average that's, I mean, kind of inflated by his BABIP to some extent. 368 BABIP, he has a 348 batting average. People, or not people, the projection systems on Fangraphs, Zips, ATC, the Bat, Steamer, they project about a 260 batting average going forward. So rest of season from today, let's take the most optimistic projection on him, and that would be Steamers. They project rest of season 4 homers, 2 steals, and a 264 batting average. Maybe they're selling him a little bit short, but we're not getting much more power than 4 homers rest of season. Even that's probably pushing it a little bit. I don't see. I mean, maybe we get him to 6-7 total homers, but that's about it. He might steal 1 or 2 bases. The team around him blows beyond belief. That I can't even understand how bad Toronto is. Even at the top of that order, I don't think that he does enough to really justify it. You know, I've been a big Davis Schneider guy. And that's kind of waned a little bit the way that the performance has gone, whatever. But, like, he has a carrying tool of massive power. You need to have something. You know, it can't just be you're in the lineup doing it. Like, you have to be able to do something, or the team around you has to be good. I just don't see there really being any particularly strong reason to hold on to Horwitz, unless you're in a deep league and you're kind of looking for those guys, spots on the corner or middle infield spot. I think that he is definitely more relegated to those deeper formats. Let's talk about the drops. The most popular drop of the day is Cole Irvin. I did a pretty lengthy write-up on him yesterday on my Patreon. If you guys want to check it out, there's a link in the description of the episode. I wrote about 2,000 words yesterday breaking down part of my extended quick hits. If you see my quick hits on Twitter, there's always an extended version. Yesterday's, I went a little bit crazy, wrote about 2,000 words. And a good chunk of them were about Cole Irvin. I think that, you know, part of what we saw from him was kind of, I don't want to say a miracle run, that's maybe putting it a little bit too strongly, but he was on a run where he could really do no wrong there for about 8-9 starts. It seemed every time out, you're getting 5 2/3, 6 strikeouts, 1 earned run, six innings, one run, five strikeouts. Like, it was that type of outing pretty consistently. I think, honestly, the run that he was on is probably over, but it is worth noting that these last three outings that have been a little bit not great, Atlanta, New York, and Cleveland. You're talking about three really, really tough offenses, so that is something that you should consider here. It's not like he's just garbage or whatever. It was some really tough opponents, and that definitely has to factor into the whole thing. But we're talking about a kind of an unlikely streak of good to great outings from a fairly borderline pitcher. It doesn't really, when you see these kind of stretches happen, guys go on these miracle runs and then they get stopped for whatever reason. They come out of the lineup, there's an injury, whatever. It's almost impossible to see them kind of get that back afterwards. There was no injury here, but once you have three kind of, and the Atlanta start wasn't really that bad, but a couple of bad outings in a row after one of those really nice runs, it is hard to get back to where you were. So I think you can safely send him back to the waiver wire in most formats. If you're talking about, again, deep 12-team leagues where there's a lot of pitchers rostered, pitching is, depending on your league, pitching can be either really valued or not valued at all. So if you're in one of those leagues where the waiver wire is just barren, then yeah, I think that you're probably holding on just because of a lack of options. But if you are in those 10-team leagues, 12-team standard size leagues, I think that he's pretty borderline and not somebody that's like you have to hold on through this run. There are certain players where you're more inclined to do that, but I think with Urban, it was a really, really nice run that's probably not going to come back again. I've actually been a bigger fan of him than most in the industry the last couple of years, but I don't think there's really too much of a reason to hold on to him. His next start is against the Rangers. Shallow league managers probably aren't starting him there anyway, so I think you're good to drop him in those 10s and 12s. Brian Baio, this is horrendous. It's gotten just completely out of hand at this point. He got destroyed by the Blue Jays, which is about as telling of a sign as you need that somebody is not right. Seven runs, five hits, and three walks over two and a third. Just absolute garbage stuff from Brian Baio. I think he's a pretty easy drop everywhere. 15-team managers, maybe you're holding on. I'm going to have that decision myself to make in one 15-team league this weekend. You know, you have to go back to May 17th to find his last start where he didn't issue multiple walks. And that's actually his only start of the year where he didn't walk a batter. Every other outing we're seeing walks from him. There's never a clean outing. There's never just a stress-free six-inning outing from Baio. There's not a lot of strikeout upside. Pitching in Boston is going to lead to some crooked numbers like we saw yesterday. I think in 15-teamers, like, again, there's just not really many other great options, so you might be holding him just because what the hell am I dropping him for kind of thing. But I think most of you guys, like, he's 47% rostered on Yahoo. We saw 3,000 drops so far today, which is good. You know, we're going in the right direction. But I just think we need to continue to see that number drop. It still feels very high that he's on 47% of rosters. Mitch Spence, I'm going to take the L here. I recommended him as an all-format streamer yesterday. He had been on a pretty solid run for a while, going through good teams and bad teams alike. So I recommended him in all formats against the Angels, and he came to a screeching halt yesterday. Six runs on eight hits and a walk across five and a third. He did strike out six, but this is pretty bad stuff. It was his worst outing of the year. Another guy who, again, he'd been on kind of a miracle run. Now that it seems to have come to an end, I very much doubt we're going to see Mitch Spence go out there the next time and give you, like, seven shutout innings. I think he's pretty damn solid, especially considering he's pitching for Oakland, whatever. Like, you could do worse, I think, in deeper leagues. But I don't think there's really a lot of hope here for shallow league managers. If you picked him up and streamed him, it didn't go well for you. And I don't think we're going to see too many more of those starts like we had earlier on in the year. 4.35 ERA, 3.78 xFIP. 3.78 Sierra is actually fairly solid, but without the strikeouts, pitching for Oakland where wins are going to be pretty hard to come by, I think he's fine. I think he's okay more so in the deeper leagues, but he gets the Angels again next week, and I think I'd be a little bit too nervous to start him in most cases. I really think that he's fine. Like, he's just kind of average. 15-team league, sure. Most of you guys, again, you're playing 10s and 12s, so you can send him back to the waiver wire in those formats. Let's talk about Mackenzie Gore, because this is one where I got a bunch of questions yesterday about him, and then we see more than 2,000 drops. Man, I understand it. He was not good yesterday. But at the same time, Mackenzie Gore, I think is on his way to becoming a proper ace. So yesterday was 5 innings, 5 hits, 5 earned runs, really bad stuff, but 1 strikeout, 3 walks. I mean, that's still pretty bad. I was about to say, but what am I saying but for? That's pretty bad stuff. 26% CSW, 10.6 swinging strike rate. Now, it's against the Padres, who have been like a top 5 offense this year. That's something to consider. I tweeted out, when was it? I guess it was about a week ago, looking at Mackenzie Gore's evolution through the years. His strikeout rate has gone up every season of his career. Walk rates have gone down. Swinging strike rate's gone up. Hard hit rate has gone down drastically every season. There are a lot of things pointing in his direction. Also, the BABIP that he's allowing is the highest of any pitcher in baseball by quite a bit. So I think you start to see some, you know, continued development down the stretch for Gore, because he is still such a young guy here, Mackenzie Gore. What is he, 23? He's 25, actually. He's 25. But we're talking about a guy who's still very young with only 56 total starts, less than 300 innings under his belt, who's already made such massive improvements this season. The strikeouts are really, like, closing in on elite level, 27%. With a pretty solid walk rate as well. Like those 20% strikeout minus walk rate, guys, I'm telling you, he dipped just below that with yesterday's start, but that is still a threshold that you got to look at and say, okay, like even if you're looking at guys in the 17, 18, 19 range, those are pretty close to elite pitchers. If you see a guy like Mackenzie Gore getting dropped because of a bad start, I think you got to do what you can to put him on your team, get him on that roster however you can, because this is a pitcher I truly think is in the middle of a breakout season. It's still a 381 ERA, even after he had a bad start yesterday and kind of a bad one last time against Arizona as well. That whip is pretty damn high. I think as the BABIP kind of goes down throughout the season, we will see the whip come down. BABIP went from 374 to 364 in yesterday's start. I think we're going to see him get closer to what we're seeing based on the projections. Somewhere in the 300, you know, 290 to 310 type of BABIP range, like most pitchers have. And then you'll see a bit of a luckier run. And not, I shouldn't even say luck, but luck will just kind of turn around for him, because he's been pretty unlucky with what we've seen so far. That 364 BABIP right now, that's a massive number. The last two seasons was 309 and 312, and he's actually better than he was in those two seasons. Simple logic and common sense would dictate that he is not going to be allowing a lot more base hits on batted balls in play just because of whatever. Like, it just seems fairly random stuff over these 16 games we've seen from him. And even still, it's been a solid, very solid strikeout minus walk with a pretty solid ERA. And the estimators, you know, last thing on Mackenzie Gore, 381 ERA, but he has a 355 XFIP, a 313 FIP, and a 353 Sierra. All those estimators are very, very good. He is definitely somebody that you're holding on to and picking up wherever you see him get dropped. Bobby Miller is an interesting one here. He is also a pretty popular drop. I didn't write him up yesterday, but he is somebody who I don't really know how to feel anymore. He had a bad outing against the White Sox, 3 runs on 4 hits with 3 walks, just 2 innings, and he only managed 1 strikeout. So the talent level with Bobby Miller is just on a whole other level. Like, the stuff is crazy. He's pitching for the Dodgers. There's a lot working in his favor, but it's been a really tough year where he's dealt with injuries, and the performance when he's been healthy, 6.75 ERA. Yeah, he's nowhere near close to that, but he's not, doesn't seem like he's quite ready yet. Did they bring him back a little too soon, maybe? I don't know what it is exactly, but these last couple starts have left quite a bit to be desired against two very, very softball opponents. In Colorado, okay, whatever, but the Rockies, even in Colorado this year, haven't been able to do much. And then against the White Sox, so I'm not dropping him. Like, he's absolutely not a drop. That would be kind of crazy to me. The talent level, pitching for the Dodgers, that would be a little bit too much. But there's a chance that he does come as a sit for next week against a pretty easy start in the Giants. It's going to be a tricky one. Going to be thinking about that one over the next few days, about how I'm going to put it up in my chart. I do a daily starting pitcher chart, just talking about 10-team, 12-team, and 15-team recommended starts and sits. I think that he's probably going to be like a 12-team recommended start and above, and then in those 10-teamers, he's probably going to be a sit for me. I want to see him kind of prove it to me before I'm fully trusting him again, but I don't think you should be dropping him. I think that's a pretty extreme reaction to a couple bad starts off the IL where maybe he's not fully ready. Maybe there's something else going on, but I think dropping a guy at who's 25 years old, pitching for the best team in baseball, I think it's a bit of a problem for me. You know, even those raw stuff numbers are still really, really good. It's 123 stuff plus last year, 121 this season. Even with all the struggles he's had, It's really just the command that's bringing him down. If you look at that location plus, quite a bit down. The walks have been a big problem, 13, nearly 14% this year. I think he just needs a bit of time to work it out, and then we're going to probably see him get back to what we've always expected from Bobby Miller, which is a top 25 starting pitcher at worst, I think. I think potentially even higher. I had him as a top 20 SP entering the season, and I think that he can very easily get back there. Just give him some time. Don't be cutting him. I know when you see a guy get blown up by the Dodge or by the White Sox, it doesn't exactly inspire confidence, but I don't think that I'm ready to be cutting him yet either, really anywhere. But that will do it, guys. I really appreciate everybody coming in and hanging out. If you haven't done so already, any ratings, reviews, subscriptions, all of that stuff really does help on the podcast. Hit that download button. Get the shows right in your feed every single day, usually between 3 and 4 p.m. Eastern. And sometimes we do two shows. There's a lot of stuff going on the feed here. If you're somebody new, welcome. Hope you're liking what you're hearing. If you guys missed yesterday, once again, I'll remind you, that show with James Anderson is gold. If you're a dynasty player, if you're a redraft player, whatever it is, we talked about 17 pitchers, went very deep going in on all of them. So make sure you guys are checking that one out. We'll be back again tomorrow. We'll be breaking down Wednesday's slate, doing this whole thing over again and talking about what stood out to me on today's game slate. But until then, everybody, take care. Have a great night.